Frank Muir goes into public transport and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Paddy went to hospital to visit his friend Mike, you see. And there was his friend spread-eagled from pulleys, every limb in plaster, bandaged up like the Invisible Man. Oh, you look terrible, Paddy. What happened? He said, well, Mick, I was working on the railway line down in a cutting, and a train came along, you see. I ran like mad along the line, but it was too fast for me. He said, but Paddy, why did you run along the line? Why didn't you run up the embankment? Now, Mick, if it beat me on the flats, what chance would I have it up there?
The train now arriving at platforms 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20 is coming in sideways.
Did you hear about the Irish level crossing attendant who kept one gate open because he was half expecting a train? You have. Well, there was a woman on a crowded bus and she was laden with parcels, and when the conductor asked for a fare, she searched and she fumbled. She moved her hands around, fumbled and searched and couldn't reach her purse. It's all right, said the man standing in front of her. I'll pay her fare. Oh, that's very kind, said the woman. Now, don't mention it. He said, I was getting a bit worried. You've unbuttoned me flies four times. Once there was a bus conductor in the United States who was accused of pushing a passenger off the bus while it was in motion and killing him, you see. He was found guilty and sentenced to the electric chair. When he was strapped in for the execution, they offered him a last request, and he asked for a banana. Well, after he'd eaten the banana, it was time for him to go, and they switched on the power, and nothing happened. He just sat there quite unharmed. They had another try, went through the whole process again. He ate another banana, they threw the switch, nothing. Third time, same thing, third banana, power on, still didn't affect him. After the third failure, they were bound by law to release him, and as the executioner undid the straps, he said, that's incredible. I mean, all those volts going through you, it has no effect. Tell me something, bud. Is it anything to do with the bananas? Oh, no, not the bananas. No, it's just I'm a very bad conductor.
I think I'd better make it clear right from the start what this program on public transport is going to be about. It'll be mostly about buses and trains. I'm sorry to have to spell that out so boldly, but transport is an area where definitions can get a little hazy. Let me prove this point with a quotation from the Daily Mail.
The Prime Minister said it was a loose classification by the Board of Trade. Locomotives, ships and aircraft should have read wire mattresses, tacks, nails and manhole covers.
You see why it is important to be clear. We're going to start with the bus, and if we miss it, there'll probably be another one along in a minute. It's fun. There'll be another joke along in a minute, too. So don't worry. It's probably the first thing you think about buses. They have this herd instinct. You very rarely see one on its own. They tend to come in little bunches. On encountering such a bunch, you should bear in mind this advice from a Yorkshire paper.
Although three buses might come along at the same time, passengers should be allowed to board only one at a time.
Buses are very easy to recognise, being large and coloured. But just in case you have difficulty spotting them, this little verse from A.D. Godley should help.
What is it that roareth thus? Can it be a motor bus? Yes, the smell and hideous hum indicat motorum bum.
It's all right, you can say anything if it's Latin. Not everyone is so uncharitable about this particular form of transport. Let's hear from a couple of devoted bus fanciers, Michael Flanders and Donald Swan.
Some talk of a Lagonda, some like a smart MG, or a Bonnie Army lorry. They'd lay them down and deem such means of locomotion seem rather dull to us. The driver and conductor of a London omnibus. Hold very tight, please, ting ting. Hold very tight, please, ting ting. When you are lost in London and you don't know where you are, you'll hear my voice a calling. Pass further down the car, and a day soon you'll find yourself in inside the terminus. Here London Transport diesel engine, 97 horsepower omnibus. Along the Queen's Great Highway, I drive my merry load at 20 miles per hour in the middle of the road. We like to drive in convoys, we're most gregarious. The big six-wheeler scarlet painted London Transport diesel engine, 97 horsepower omnibus. Earth has not anything to show or fear.
Find the stairs.
Find the stairs.
Find the stairs.
Find the stairs. Earth has not anything to show or fear. Any more fears? Any more fears? When cabbies try to pass me before they overtakes, I sticks me flipping hand out as I jams on all me brakes. Them jackal taxi drivers can only swear and cuss behind that monarch of the road, observer of the highway code. That big six-wheeler, scarlet paint, and the transport diesel engine, 97 horsepower omnibus. I stops when I'm requested, although it spoils the ride, so we can shout,
"Get out of it!
We'll pull right up inside." We don't ask much for wages, we only want fair shares. So cut down all the stages and stick up all the fares. If tickets cost £1 a piece, why should you make a fuss? It's worth it just to ride inside that 30-foot long by 10-foot wide, inside that monarch of the road, observer of the highway code, that big six-wheeler scarlet painted London Transport diesel engine, 97 horsepower, 97 horsepower omnibus.
Hold many gate, please.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. People aren't very kind about buses on the whole. One hears constant complaints about long waits at bus stops, about the slowness of the vehicles when they arrive, about the petty regulations for passengers. Mind you, some of those regulations can be circumvented. An anonymous limerick.
There was an old fellow called Beeling who boarded a bus bound for Ealing. A note on the door said, "Don't spit on the floor," so he stood up and spat on the ceiling.
If you do get annoyed on a bus, there's absolutely no point in taking it out on the machine itself. A little poem by W.J. Turner makes this point.
You cannot cuss the motor bus, and brilliant wit is lost on it.
What you can cuss is the conductor, and poor conductors have to weather a lot of abuse from their passengers. Most of it is undeserved. It's just that people have to release their frustrations somehow. Being a bus conductor is a potentially depressing job, and perhaps steps should be taken to liven it up. Here's a suggestion from Picture Post.
In Geneva, the Swiss tram conductors blow blasts on hunting horns whenever any new fare pays up. In my considered opinion, the adoption of this custom would give English conductors a greater pride in their work.
Mind you, there are a few bus conductors who don't seem to feel the public service element in their job as much as they should. A report from the Daily Mirror.
I wondered why my bus was going so fast late at night. And then the conductor said, "We're nipping along a bit sharpish to miss the cinema crowds."
It causes one to ponder, does it not, how bus conductors, and indeed bus drivers, are trained.
I'd like to take one of the students, Johnson. You want to get in the bus, Mrs. Selkirk, you want to get back to your marks back there? Good. Here's the situation, Johnson. You've just pulled into a stop, you've discharged your passengers, and out of the rearview mirror, you notice this old woman running for the bus. Okay. You want to start running now, Mrs. Selkirk? Okay, let's see how Johnson goes about handling it. Hold it, Johnson. You're pulling out much too fast, Johnson. See, she gave up about halfway in the block, you see. Yeah, what you want to do is just kind of gradually ease out, you see, so you're always holding out the hope they may be able to catch the bus. Oh, another thing you want to watch. A lot of these old women, they'll run at three-quarter speed, you see. Then they'll put on a final burst and they'll catch up with a bus, so... Graham, you want to be the bus driver? Yes. Mrs. Horkirk, you want to get back to your mark again? All right, let's try it with Graham. Same situation. All right. You want to start running again, Mrs. Selkirk? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see how Graham handles this situation. All right, fine. Did y'all see how he slammed the door right in her face that time? That's known as your perfect pullout. Oh, one other thing. It wasn't part of the problem, but I want to compliment you on it. You blocked both lanes that time, pulling in.
Superb track of Bob Newhart from the Button-Down Mind Strikes Back. The passenger-bus-conductor relationship has spawned a whole series of format jokes. And I think Alfred and I would be failing in our duty if we didn't let you sample a few. Are you ready, Alfred?
Ready, sir.
Safety net, Sergeant.
Right.
Here we go. Conductor, conductor, do you stop at the Dorchester Hotel?
What, on my salary?
Conductor, conductor, you going to Clapham?
Only if they're very good, sir.
Conductor, conductor, you going to Turnham Green?
If I can get the paint, yes, sir, I will, yes.
Conductor, conductor, am I all right for barking?
I don't know, I haven't heard you yet.
Conductor, conductor, does this bus stop at the embankment?
If it doesn't, sir, there's going to be one hell of a splash.
And so on and so on. But let's move from the ridiculous to the sublime, to romance on a bus. Here's Roger McGough with his poem, My Bus Seductress.
She's as beautiful as bus tickets and smells of old cash. Drinks Guinness off duty, eats sausage and mash. But like everyone else, she has her bus dreams too. When the peak hour is over and there's nothing to do. Four-poster upstairs, a jukebox inside, but on more ways than one of enjoying a ride. Velvet curtains on the windows, thick carpets on the floor, roulette under the stairs, a bar by the door. Three times a day she perform a striptease, and during the applause say nicely, fares please. Upstairs she'd reserve for men of her choice, invite them along in her best clippy voice. She knows it sounds silly, what would the police say? But thinks we'd be happier if she had her way. There are so many young men she'd like to know better, give herself with the change if only they'd let her. Beautiful as bus tickets and smells of old cash. Drinks Guinness off duty, eats sausage and mash. But she has her bus dreams hot and nervous. My blue-serged queen of the transport service.
Roger McGough, I think we've had enough of buses. We'll change on to trains. The British railway system often seems confusing, particularly to outsiders. Here's the view of the American writer Margaret Halsey.
English trains apparently make a habit of always going toward London, and when they get there, are taken apart and mailed back to Land's End and Edinburgh.
As they couldn't afford the postage nowadays. To understand the railways, it is essential to consult the timetable. This will enable you to organize your life with as much exactness as the lady in this anonymous limerick.
There was an old lady named Carr who took the 3:3 to Forfar. For she said, I believe it is likely to leave far before the 4:4 to Forfar.
Yes, go on, go on. Charitable, but nonetheless acceptable. The trouble is that timetables sometimes seem to be works of fiction, particularly when trains are delayed or cancelled due to unforeseen circumstances. The reasons for cancellation are many. Though usually it's blamed on the late arrival of the one before, whatever that means. Here's a report from the old Daily Worker.
Three trains between Dudley and Warsaw, which have been cancelled to save fuel, are still running. but to show that they are officially cancelled, no passengers are allowed to travel on them.
Actually, to be fair on British Rail, cancellations and delays are not the major reasons why people miss trains. Often the fault is with the passenger. Some people just can't do it. G.K. Chesterton.
The only way to catch a train I ever discovered is to miss the train before.
For some passengers, cutting it fine is half the fun. Here's a description of a character by Gwen Reverat.
But she never, never missed the train. I think she felt that it would not have been sporting to start in time. It would not have given the train a fair chance of getting away without her.
It's bad enough to have people missing trains, but it's even worse when the trains themselves go missing.
You know, I don't have an easy job, Spriggs.
No, sir, I know you don't, sir.
I suppose each week I have to investigate about 30 serious complaints against the railways.
Yes, sir.
In a bad week, perhaps 50.
Yes, sir.
And each complaint takes a great deal of time.
Yes, sir, I know it does, sir.
Last week, Spriggs, I had to investigate several serious complaints against you personally.
Oh, sir.
Actually, about 40,000.
I'm sorry, sir.
That's a lot of complaints, Spriggs.
It is, sir, lots, sir.
About Monday's incident.
Oh, sir.
Last Monday, Spriggs, you were scheduled to drive the 10:15 to Bristol.
Yes, sir.
But you didn't take it, did you, Spriggs?
No, sir.
You took a cattle train.
Yes, sir.
Why, Spriggs?
I like animals, sir.
You like animals?
Yes, sir, especially cows.
So you took 700 of them?
Yes, sir.
The entire London to Brighton cattle train? To Manchester?
Yes, sir.
Why Manchester, Spriggs?
Well, I've been to Brighton, sir.
So you took 700 cows to Manchester?
Yes, sir. Travel broadens the mind, sir.
But even if you wanted to go north, Spriggs, why didn't you take the up line?
I got confused, sir.
But you ignored all the signals.
I was out of my cabin, sir.
Sitting on the engine flying your kite. Yes, I've seen the photographs. It's in the papers. What are you laughing at, Spriggs?
I'm trying to break the ice, sir.
Don't push me, Spriggs. Now, about Manchester Cathedral.
I forgot to stop, sir.
Yes, I know, Spriggs. The traffic policemen have told me. So has the Archbishop. He has described the arrival of you and your locomotive in the nave during the 49th Psalm in no little detail. It seems to have been an unnerving experience for the entire congregation, Spriggs.
I said I was sorry, sir.
He goes on to say, Spriggs, that when he tried to restore calm by mounting what was left of the pulpit to begin his sermon, you started shunting operations in the east transept.
Way, sir. I was trying to help him, sir.
Then why did you release the cows?
I panicked, sir. I couldn't see it all the steam.
Neither could the congregation, Spriggs. That's why the cows came as rather a shock. The organ and the clanking and the hot steam would have impressed an atheist, let alone those who believe in the wrath of God. Even the Archbishop have said he thought it was the end of the world.
I could pay for the damage, sir. I took a collection.
John Cleese and Marty Feldman. Another popular butt of humour is British Rail food. You know, all those cruel jokes about wringing out dishcloths into the teacups and polystyrene cakes and how the sandwiches are put in curlers. Mind you, the railways do suffer from dissension within their own ranks on the subject of food. Here's a report from the Daily Express.
We run our cars like first-class hotels, said a Pullman official rather snootily to me yesterday. On British railways, meals are merely for people who want to eat.
For absolutely no reason at all, let's hear an anonymous limerick.
There was a young lady of Spain who often got sick on a train, not now and again, but again and again, and again and again and again.
However, there is a correct social observance for every occasion, including that one. Let's hear a letter from Picture Post.
People who find it necessary to vomit whilst in a railway carriage should discreetly use their hats. This would come naturally to anyone properly brought up.
That was a year or two ago, of course. Sick transit. There was always someone around, you know, with a helpful suggestion. Here's another from a letter to the Daily Mirror on that old cause for complaint, cleanliness on the railways.
Dandruff may be contracted by resting the head against infected upholstery in railway carriages. I suggest, therefore, that railway carriages should be boiled for 20 minutes at each station or halt.
Excellent idea. Actually, standards of cleanliness do occasionally slip. Here's the Daily Mirror again.
A member of the platform staff admitted that the station was a bit grubby. He said, well, in the past, we've always waited for a strong wind to blow the dust away.
Well, that's about enough knocking of British Rail. Let's have a go at a passenger again. How about this one reported in the News of the World?
When Detective Sergeant Nichols asked, what's the idea? Mr. Cathy replied, everybody has his own peculiarities and this is mine. He said he'd been travelling naked in trains for about 2 years, but did not think anyone had seen him.
Yes, it seems that people do get up to strange things on trains.
Some years ago, when I was rather hard up, I wanted to buy myself a new pair of trousers. But being rather hard up, I was quite unable to buy myself a new pair until some very kind friend whispered into my ear hole that if I looked sharp about it, I could get myself quite a nice second-hand pair from the sales department of the London Passenger Transport Board Lost Property. And before I accepted this kind offer, I got involved in a great deal of fastidious struggling with my inner soul, because I wasn't very, very keen to assume the trousers which some lunatic had taken off on a train going eastbound. However, after a great deal of moral contortion, I steeled myself to the alien crutch and made my way. And I made my way towards the London Passenger Transport Board Lost Property Sales Department in Portman Square, where I found, to my surprise and pleasure, instead of a tumbled heap of lunatic's trousers, I found a very neat heap of brand new, bright blue corduroy trousers. There were 400 of them. How can anyone lose 400 pairs of trousers? I mean, it's hard enough to lose a brown paper bag full of old orange peel when you really want it. And anyway, 400 men wearing no trousers would attract some sort of attention. No, it's clearly part of a complex economic scheme on the part of the London Passenger Transport Board. A complex economic scheme along Galbraithian lines, presumably. So over now to the Economics Planning Division of the London Passenger Transport Board Ops Room.
All right, then. Operation Cerulean Trouser. Now we're going to issue each one of you men with a brand new, bright blue pair of corduroy trousers. Your job will be to disperse to all parts of London, to empty railway carriages, and to divest yourself of these garments. Once the trousers have left your body, your job ends there, and I mean that. All right, now. Are there any questions? Good. Well, chins up and trousers down. And they disperse to places far out on the reaches of the central line. Places with unlikely names of Chipping Ongar. There, in the empty railway carriages, they let themselves into the compartments. And then before they commit their final act of detrouserment, the final existential moment, as it were, they do those little personal things which people sometimes do when they think they're alone in railway carriages. Things like smelling their own armpits. Part of the human condition, I suppose. But anyway, it's quite possible they didn't even take their trousers off in the compartments, but made their way along the narrow corridor towards the lavatory at the end. That wonderful little room where there's that marvellous unpunctuated motto over the lavatory saying, gentlemen, lift the seat. What
exactly does this mean? Is it a sociological description, a definition of a gentleman, which I can either take or leave? Perhaps it's a loyal toast. But anyway, Willy Lilly, they stripped stark naked and then nude, entirely nude. Nude, that is, except for cellular underwear. For man is born free, but everywhere is in cellular underwear. They make their way back to headquarters through the chilly nocturnal streets of sleeping Whitechapel. Fleet white figures in the night. While in upstairs rooms, mothers quiet their restless children. Turn your face to the wall, my darling, while the gentleman trots by.
Jonathan Miller. We close with a notice from a Durham level crossing.
Beware of trains going both ways at once.
Alfred and me. Mind the doors.
Hold on, buddy, take me.
Muir Goes Into Public Transport was produced by Simon Brett.